Blog Talk Radio.
Shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
And if I may say that these Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here. The incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good Doc.
Hello.
What's up, Eddie?
Hey, man.
Yeah, call the show, can you?
Yeah, but you know what? But you're perfect, because I just pulled up into my driveway.
10-4.
Give me 2 minutes.
You got it.
All right.
Trying to get the crew together here as we move into our first show. We're going to do another next show from Aruba. Remembering Muhammad Ali. It was last year this time that the greatest of all time expired. Jacino Baby Lois is here. Gonna get Howard Weston Jr., Eddie Cotton. How do we reach out some other people too? Get them on the line real quick and just thoughts and reflections just next hour on Muhammad Ali. It's remarkable. You know, his classic line was, "Service to others is rent you pay for your room here on earth." And I saw in his grave, they put, "Service to others is rent you pay for your room in heaven." Cassius Marcellus Clay came on the scene, and the scene was forever changed and never the same. He won a gold medal as a light heavyweight champion, and then became the first man to win heavyweight champion of the world 3 times. Ah, there's so much to say. Reflections and thoughts we'll do here today as we remember Muhammad Ali. We'll all open up in prayer. Play a little Miles Davis in the background. And Eddie Cotton should be joining us. Just, you know, Baby Lois already here. Got to get a shout out to my man, Howard Weston Jr. Try to get to meet other people that can real quickly to come in. Thoughts and reflections on Ali. Just trying to catch people when I can here. The crew is here. But, Cassius Clay. Muhammad Ali. I never looked down on the people that look up to me. Death is so near and time is so short for acts of friendly persuasion. You know, there's so many athletes today that they say they respect Ali. They admire Ali, but they don't do like Ali. Ali always had time for his people. Yeah. Time flies. My uncle, we have a cousin, and he has a classic line. He said, you know, you don't mind dying, but you stay dead so long. Doc Stanley, Sports Net, Block Talk Radio, the Trust and Coverage Network. Music always apropos because it's June, but it don't feel like summer. Cool in the gang. Greatest music they ever did. Lay back, relax. Let's enjoy it. SID remembers Muhammad Ali. Hey, G-Dub. Okay, call the show, man. We're doing something. Remember Muhammad Ali. If you got anybody else you want to call, let them call. Okay, step up, baby. Waiting for you. You got a mic that's in, Mike. You can't keep asking me this, baby. 646-200-0373. I know. Little Pete, baby. Hey, baby. Love you, Little Pete. Hey, baby. Lord, we thank you for another day. This morning's getting up, last night's lying down, and woken, as my mother said, clothed in a right mind. We remember and thank you for the likes of Muhammad Ali, a man who was a credit to his race, the African-American race, human race, and the boxing race. We remember him, and we thank you for him, and the others like him. But where there's Ali, there's Joe. Where there's Joe, there's Sugar Ray Robinson. Lord, we ask you not so much give us what we want, but give us what we need. And we hope it's the combination of both. And we always ask that you bless his family as they are in a year anniversary of remembering his passing. And our number one listener from Volta Redonda. We say happy birthday, too, for the people today. My daughter, Chassie, my Uncle Robin, my youngest boy, Christian, Tamara Leah. We go to Brazil, Jeremy and Carmen. Remember Josephine Baker on the 3rd, 106 years old. But more importantly, Lord, let your way be our way. We know not what tomorrow brings, but we know who brings tomorrow. But thank you for today. Thank you for yesterday. No, thank you. There is tomorrow. In the name of your darling son, I ask you to bless the Ali family. In Jesus' name, the Lord.
You're listening to Sports and Death on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and God Radio Network with Doc Stanley and his posse, where we rope the rumors, call tidy issues, and brand the truth. Trust in God.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. You're listening to Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. Before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports in Depth.
Remember the first time I heard this, because I just did a Rocky movie. It was a Sunday afternoon. Muhammad Ali had just fought, and it was the closing music that they played. but this is in life. And we do a show today. Remember Muhammad Ali? I was a little taken back. We got Dusty here. Eddie Cotton is joining us. GW Mike. I just a little taken back when his birthday came this year. There was I didn't see anything about his birthday. Check the roll call. Dusty, you're here. Mike is here. Eddie Cotton is here. I got a 646. Who's that now joining us? 646-552-4786. Who's joining us? Okay, I guess they didn't want to say. Gentlemen,
yeah, Doc,
we'll start
Doc,
with
I'm
you,
here.
Dusty.
Yeah.
Okay, no, I know you, Eddie. I got another call here. Eddie, I'll start
you
with
doing,
you. So good, Eddie Cotton. You know, I think about you, Eddie, and we were watching the fight.
Mr.
And
Cotton, how you doing?
I'm good.
And Gilberto Ortiz, and everybody just holds the IBF such a high respect. Because, you know, you don't come in overweight for an IBF fight. And that Spence fight last week was just another showcase of a great job by a great organization, one that people forget that Robert Lee and Larry Holmes put on the map. I remember how prestigious and honored I was when they made me their sportscaster of the year. Eddie, thoughts and reflections on Muhammad Ali?
One of the greatest, if not the greatest, individual not only involved in boxing but worldwide to come on the scene, be controversial in his name changing, becoming a Muslim, making a statement about not going to a war, and
right.
Just a tremendous individual that stood for right. And that exemplified it in the ring, even though he talked a lot of shit, people might say, but he backed it up, and he was able to have the ability to get inside people's heads, which is a real key element in sport. And he definitely was a model for doing the right thing with Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing. And he was the man. And I remember when his daughter let me in the women's bathroom down in Atlantic City. I was late for a fight. You know, they called late, and the fight moved up. And I had to go to the bathroom right before I went to the ring. And she went to the women's bathroom to get everybody out and let me go to the bathroom. And I always thanked her for that. And she hugged me. She said, "Yeah, Eddie, we know you got to pee. When a man got to pee, he got to pee." So, he's just a great individual.
It was so much like him. Attitude, the obligation she felt, I remember, to, like Ali, autographs, interviews, pictures, something, the spitting image of her dad, facially inside the ring and as a person. Hey, what's up,
you know, Mom? I didn't mean to cut you off, Doc, but I was with Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney last night. Yeah.
I'm Ali. Talking about Ali. Can you give us a call? Can I just a minute or two? 646-200-0373.
Doc,
what I was
going to
say.
Good.
Doc, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Eddie.
You'll even
hear you.
Yeah, Doc. I was with Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney last night.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really funny because Jerry Cooney is on the board for the Youth Services Bureau in New Jersey, which is a youth advocate program, creates crisis intervention and a bunch of different things for youth, right?
Wow.
So this is the fifth year in a row that Jerry Cooney has had a boxing exhibition. Last year he fought the police chief of Union. And this year he fought the mayor of Hoboken and another gentleman from another organization in an exhibition, and I was the guest referee. I've been the guest referee for the past 5 years. It's like a benefit. And
wow.
He had Larry Holmes there as a guest. You know, he even faked like he was going to throw about two or three low blows, and also had Tracy Morgan, you know, there, the comic. And they had a couple of the actors from The Sopranos that were in the area. One of them lives in Hoboken. The other one lives in Jersey City. It was just a nice fundraiser, and we just had a good time. They had 8 amateur bouts, and then they had 2 3-rounders. with Jerry Cooney and me being the guest referee. In fact, I even punched Jerry because he had a cup on. I even punched him low one time.
that would have been funny. I would hope that they will film those things so the folks could see how well you guys are organized and how much you're giving to the community. You know, with all this tweeting and instant media on the negative side,
a film
like that, you know, shown on major television should be able to boost more and bring more people to participate and support it. There's so much negative press today.
You're right.
Hey, guys, I got a question for you. Going into, you know, you were talking about that Brook fight. You know, we talk about paying homage to Muhammad. The broken jaw situation. What was that? The Ken Norton fight, right?
The second Ken Norton fight.
Yeah.
Second, all right. So we were talking the other day, and we're talking about Kell Brook, you know, the fight that happened with the Spence fight. The eyes were squinting. He gives up in the middle of the fight. Where do we go with these athletes, these fighters now? It just seems like every major fight that we run into, there's a guy who we thought was going to be, all right, this guy's going to start showing something for boxing that we're going to have
New
a couple
York.
People.
We're doing a show tonight, Salute to Ali. If you can join us, I know it's the last minute, but
we don't have
producers got together
left.
Here. You can join us and talk about Ali.
We'd
love it.
We're going to take the carriers over into the next generation of fighters, but we keep losing them one by one. So something like that. And again, I know a lot of people say, oh, you would have went blind. But in retrospect, you know, guys like Ali fought with broken jaws. Guys like Carmen Basilio had an eye that
closed, totally closed.
Completely closed. But you have to understand, Mike, that Kell Brook is subject to he's subject to be blinded because both eye sockets were fractured, one by Triple G and now by Spence on the left eye. So now he's facing the same surgery on the left eye that he faced on the right eye. So this is a man
let's just stay with Ali right here. Good point to bring it up.
Wait a minute. Let me just finish your statement. Hopefully.
Well, I got Mark Miller here. Great point you brought up, but let's move into Ali.
If you let me finish, I'll be finished in 2 seconds. Because we're talking about injuries. And Ali fought with a lot of injuries. And one of those... One of the guys who really put a lot of hurting on Ali was Ken Norton. He fought him 3 or 4 times, and then he got to give him the roughest time.
Boy, you found the way in. Ladies and gentlemen, often imitated but never duplicated. It's funny you said that, too, because I'm looking at a picture of them. They had the last... Ali and Norton at Yankee Stadium was the last outdoor heavyweight championship fight ever fought in the 20th century at Yankee Stadium in New York City and in America. And get a little blessed, love you, baby, because one of the items that I donated to the Smithsonian is an autographed press ticket from that fight by Muhammad Ali. That fight was, in fact, if I'm correct, Dusty, wasn't there a big police strike that night, too?
Exactly.
I believe the police went on strike that night of that fight.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, that was a strike.
Yeah.
That was a strike time, and man, it was a freaking war in that ring. But Ali sustained so much injuries, and I'm going to use that word loosely, injuries in and outside of the ring, because people try to destroy him for being the stand-up, honest person that he was. You know, honesty is something that's a loose term today. But a man who speaks the truth, what happens, he winds up castigated and ostracized and almost jailed. And that's what this man went through.
Well, in this day and age, you got to understand, we can only, we don't deal with the truth anymore. We don't even deal with false accusations and symposiums.
You know what? It's remarkable. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, when you listen to Sports In Depth, and you know, yes, I'm prejudiced toward these guys. I love these guys. But, you know, they have a lot more than just boxing to him. And, you know, and what you both guys, there was a movie a few years ago,
And there was a line in the movie where the guy said that he wished his girlfriend had lied to him about the way she felt about him. And this was his line. This was his line. He said, because lying, are you ready, gentlemen? Lying is the currency of the world. You guys just said that. Lying is the currency of the world.
Absolutely.
You know, and so often Sports in Depth goes from Sports in Depth to the World in Depth. Just a tremendous line, you know, and tremendous insight. And which shows, ladies and gentlemen, that boxers have a lot more intellect than what they're perceived to have. And we've got one of the great boxers of all time here with us, the Golden Boy, the man who actually made events, my daughter's favorite fighter. Mark Breland, thoughts and reflections of a guy, and he had an impact on everybody. And we love to have you, baby, and we talk about, now we got him here, we can talk about Wilder. Mark, thoughts, reflections on Muhammad Ali.
Well, it was a great fight. It was a great person. You know, I mean, he dealt with a lot of, you know, adversity, but he overcame all of that stuff. And most fighters today, you know, would fall apart after, you know, doing some, you know, if they were in situations like Ali was, they'd fall apart. I'm good,
hey,
yourself.
Yeah, we're doing a show tonight. Can you call in and talk a little bit about Muhammad Ali? We got Mark Green and a couple of people. Okay, here's the number.
Mark, how are we doing?
Yeah, I'm going.
How are you doing, Mark?
All right.
Mark, when you were, let me ask you a question. When you were coming up, was Muhammad Ali one of your idols?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I wanted to see him. A friend of my parents took me to see him in the fight, Joe Frazier in 71.
Yeah. Oh, that must have been interesting.
646-200.
Oh, yeah.
0373.
And now, Mark, let me ask you a question. You've been around the game. You fought in one of the
right now, baby.
Olympic
right now, we're waiting for you.
The greatest Olympic team ever. You've seen, you know, you've been in the Croncs. You've seen style after style.
Right.
Have you ever seen anybody ever been able to duplicate Muhammad Ali's style? That's
what before you start, Mike. You know, I remember Jose Torres telling me Muhammad Ali did everything wrong. Everything
exactly.
You told a fighter not
everything,
to do, Ali did.
Everything.
Kept his hands down low.
Exactly.
He said everything you would tell somebody not to do. You said, no, but look at Ali. Now, you ain't going to be like him, but it's remarkable. And your intellect, Mike, they had a great time in your family. But Jose Torres told me, and Dusty was there too, man. We said, Jose said, and you were there laughing with me too, Dusty. Jose said, everything you tell the fighter not to do, Muhammad Ali
did. Exactly.
And it worked for him. Do you remember his quote when he says, I'm too pretty to get hit. So my style, my style is geared for me so I don't get hit. And this is why I fight the way I fight. And he was successful. Why? Because you know full well, folks, the heavyweights are clumsy oxes. They're slow-footed. Most of them are anyway. They move, they're slow. And he danced his way to fame. And he danced his way to the championships, and these guys could not touch him. But he says, "I fight this way because I don't like getting hit," and that was his own creation.
How you feeling?
And he broke the rules. There's nothing in the book of rules of boxing says you do what Muhammad Ali did. He created that book.
Listen, man, can you call and talk a little bit about Muhammad Ali? He's on the show tonight. Can you call in and just give him a few minutes of your valuable time? Right now, if you can, I'll give you the number. I mean, hey, listen, you ain't got to stay long. 2 minutes of you is 80 minutes of somebody else. Man, it's good to hear your voice, Eddie. Love you, Eddie. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. You ready? Okay.
I got him coming from far. Angelman Freddy has just joined us, and Eddie Mustafa Muhammad should be joining us too. Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, it's remember Muhammad Ali, and we're talking about the greatest of all time, and as Mark Breland said, inside and outside of the ring. And right now, Angelman Freddy, champ, it's a great having you. Your thoughts and reflections.
How you doing?
Yeah, that Mark Breland here too. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad is going to join us. Angel, your thoughts and reflections on the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali.
Greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. Well, it was October 30th, 1974, Rumble in the Jungle, Ali versus George Foreman. I was born that same day. So it's God that made me a fighter. And I was born on the greatest fight of all time, and I give that fight the best fight of all time. It was on my birthday, and the Rumble in the Jungle was going on, and Ali fought a superb fight, and he beat up Foreman. He was a great fighter. I mean, both Hall of Famers. Ali, one of the best, baby. Hello?
It goes in and out.
Yeah, I think that he went off. Hey, Doc.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know what? Let me tell all the guys this. Mark, Breland, and Dusty. I was a young kid. My father took me to my father took me to the Stanley Theater in Jersey City to see Muhammad Ali against Larry Holmes, and me. And my father, first time I ever seen him cry. We both cried.
Mm.
You know, I never saw my father cry before, but we both cried. I said that was a moment that stuck with me. You know, my father's gone now, but I remember that like it was yesterday.
You know, it's remarkable. I went down to Doc Stanley Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Sports in Depth remembers Muhammad Ali. I remember going down to Larry's camp and did his piece on him. And his daughter talked about the pride that Larry had of being Ali's sparring partner. Ali had given him a black eye, and he wore that black eye around like he was driving a brand new Rolls Royce. And if you look, if I'm correct, gentlemen, Ali's the only guy to ever have two guys who were sparring partners become heavyweight champion of the world.
That's why Larry Holmes was so great, because he learned. And he was, and he grew up with Ali. That was his main sparring partner. And when Larry Holmes got into that Don King heavyweight tournament on those battleships, the outstanding star of that tournament was Larry Holmes.
Right.
People don't remember that history. How great he was, how fast he moved, and if there was anybody who gave you a taste of how Muhammad Ali fought, it was Larry Holmes.
That was a great fight he had with Norton. That was a tremendous fight that Larry Holmes had with Norton.
Larry, I got Eddie Mustafa here. I got to make sure we get on here. We're having some problems with the board here. Eddie Mustafa's going to. Yeah, it was, ironically, it was Norton's first defense of the heavyweight champion of the world that he was given when Leon Spinks decided to go back at Ali, which was the common sense move. That's the moment he was going to be fighting Ali again. It was the right thing to do, and he probably figured he could beat Ali a lot easier than he could beat Kenny Norton. But when Leon Spinks decided to give Ali the rematch, and Kenny Norton was given the belt, and Larry Holmes beat Kenny Norton. Then later on, as we all know, what Larry Holmes did to make the IBF what it was. But it was a great fight. And it was a close fight, too. You know, that fight, I think, gentlemen, if we look at it, could have went either way. Either way.
Yeah.
Thoughts and reflections on that fight, gang? I remember that fight, too. I believe it was on a Friday night, too, if I'm correct. I think it was on a Friday night, once again on live TV. And ladies and gentlemen, now you talk about somebody that knows Muhammad Ali well. Another gentleman, back when you talk about Brownsville, some of the baddest dudes in the world came from Brownsville. And everybody talks about the heavyweights. Well, hey, Eddie the Flame Gregory, who later became Eddie. And I tell people,
You know, you show what a champion does. Eddie told Johnson, look, Johnson, this is what we'll do, baby. I'm going to come down there and fight you in your living room if I have to. And don't worry about the money. I'll fight you where you want, when you want. Just have the title because I'm taking it back with me. And Eddie, am I telling the truth?
You telling the truth. I mean, that's how much confidence I had in myself.
Gentlemen, Eddie,
that's Mustafa Brooklyn
Muhammad is online. Mark Breland, that's Eddie, another Brooklyn boy.
What's up, man?
Hey, Mark, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, yourself.
You're doing a
Eddie.
Great job with your champion, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Eddie, you know, we got you here. Your thoughts and reflection on a man who was, I mean, you and Ali were like brothers. Can you talk about him and how you met him and as we do the 1 year anniversary of his passing, your thoughts and reflections on your friend, your brother, your mentor, Muhammad Ali, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, please.
Well, basically, you know, when you think about Ali, we had such a strong relationship. I mean, we went a couple of places together when he first got his private jet, which he had a butterfly and a bee on the wing. So he met me at the airport in New Jersey and just told me to bring my toothbrush. And I did that. And we went to Panama. We went to the Cayman Islands. We went all over the place, man, with just my toothbrush. You know, but that's the type of guy Ali is.
That's him.
Man,
that's
Ali.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the type of guy he was, man. You know, if he liked you, he really showed it, man. He would do just about anything for you, you know?
Harold Weston talked about him coming into Harold's office when Harold became the matchmaker, and he told Harold that a couple of things. First, he was surprised. Two, he didn't believe it. And then how much support and pride, Harold, that he had in you being the first and only African-American matchmaker in history of Madison Garden, Harold. Harold Weston?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Harold.
Got a lot of feedback.
Yeah, somebody is I'm at the speakerphone there. But Harold, let's talk about, you know, Muhammad Ali, what he meant to the game and you know, and how many lives he touched, like Mark Breland said, outside of the ring and outside of people outside of boxing. But in boxing, you know, you talked about it, Harold, came up there at the Garden, told you how proud he was, told you how much support he had you, and just told you, you know, he kind of marveled. You know, it's like, you know, a black president. He didn't think an African-American would ever be the matchmaker, Harold, at Madison Square Garden. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, we had a long discussion that day because he was there for the anniversary of him and Joe Frazier fighting at the Garden. And he just walked off, left the party, and just came into my office, and we sat there for like an hour and just started talking about the issue of, you know, boxing itself. But I got to say, Ali was a unique world champion, man, like you ever seen. I mean, he would give you a shirt off his back, man, if you thought that you needed help or anything. I mean, he was just this kind of guy. But one thing that he really surprised me, he just gave me his private number. He told me, he said, anything you need, anything happens, anybody even threatens you, give me a call. He said, "Cause you gonna need some help."
as Howard could tell, young man, you're telling it like it is. And Dr. Eddie, for the Block Talk Radio and Trust and Guardian Network, they are all here, champions, legends himself, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Eddie Cotton, Angel Man, Freddie, Mark Breland, Justine Lois, talking about the man who touched us all so profoundly as both a champion inside and outside the ring as we move into the 1 year anniversary of the passing of the former Cassius Marcellus Clay, Muhammad Ali. Eddie, you know, just a toothbrush, and, you know, you talked about how, because a lot of people thought you got into the Nation through him, but you had long been interested in Islam before you met Muhammad Ali. Am I correct?
That is correct. My brother and sister, my older brother and sister, they were Muslims before, And I always looked up to them, and they steered me in the right way. And today, that's the best decision that I've ever made, was becoming a Muslim.
Okay. And ironically, Dr. Stanley Sports Net, Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. If you want, we lost Angel Manfredi. Hope he gets back to us. You can call in too and join us, 646-200-0373, 646-200-0373. Remember Muhammad Ali. Ali, like you, Eddie, back in high school, you know, it was a situation where Malcolm led him into the nation. Ali had long veered into studying and learning about Islam before he met Malcolm. Malcolm may have been that,
exactly.
You know, the last push.
Exactly.
So like yourself, Ali had long had a desire. He was interested in it, you know, and he it just wasn't something. Like you said, Trudy, it just wasn't a sudden. It wasn't a sudden decision. It wasn't a fad. It was something that both of you gentlemen had got into as youth, and you both pursued it.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we were both looking for the truth. You know what I'm saying? Some kind of guidance. And we found it by hooking up with the Nation of Islam. You know, that was, like I said, best thing that ever happened to me in my lifetime was becoming a Muslim. And I kept reading. Every day I read. I get wiser and wiser.
You know, it's remarkable. Then we, and Dusty was there at New York Society when they had the tribute to him by our late dear friend, my dear friend, Newman Neiman, and also my other close friend there, good buddy, George Kalinske. And it was Mike Wallace who came up. And you were there, Dusty, when we read that. Michael Bellamy came up with the term. There was no such thing as black Muslims. That was a term.
Not at all.
Injected on the nation by Mike
Wallace.
White
press.
It's, you know,
the white press.
Right. The Nation of Islam. You know, it that great line you talk about in the Westerns, you know, when the white guys and settlers came down and killed the Indians, it was a military victory. When the Indians retaliated and killed them, it was a massacre. You know, and this was the same thing here. You know, the Nation of Islam. You know. People understand scalping was something that was done to the Indians.
Yeah, when we went over to that honoring his legacy in that museum, remember how the press also misquoted everything that he said? And there was the actual caption of when
you would love. He said, no, Ali was the first athlete that his religion was always talked about. Remember, Dusty?
No, right, exactly. But what I'm trying to highlight, besides what you just finished saying, which is correct, was the fact that the press mismatched everything that he was quoted as saying. But the real quote about him not going over to fight the enemy, it was not a refusal. He said, if you stop treating my brothers the way they are being treated here, you don't have to draft me. I would go. But they were calling him a draft dodger because he refused to go. But when you stop abusing and killing our over 600 million brothers and sisters here, and stop the war here, I wouldn't mind being drafted. And people did not put that in the papers.
You got to remember one thing. Yeah. We didn't have no enemies. We didn't have no enemies. Like Ali said, Viet Cong never called him a nigger.
Exactly.
So we didn't have an enemy. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole key.
But they made him to look like a cowardly draft dodger, just like Jack Dempsey and Gene Tunney and all them suckers who were pulled to go into the military. But he said, hey, if everything was equal with our people here, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind going down there. But you got to take care of our people. But they misquoted him. And you folks should go over to that museum and see the actual quote of him not going to the war.
You know how we talk about that all the time. You know, we were in a conversation the other night. I crack up because you still see them bigots that are out there in this situation. You know, I was talking to somebody about a year ago. And, you know, he's a southerner. And the guy still addressed him as Clay. And I said, for somebody to be that ignorant in this day and age to still address the guy
exactly.
as play. And I
just
said
being
to myself,
stuck on stupid.
So, but listen, it gets even better than this because I'm sitting here as an Italian, listening, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm sitting back here because as an Italian, we have the wonderful experience of we can play undercover. You know, people automatically they think that they could, because of the reflection, they could pull the bigotry card on us. They don't realize that deep underneath, we're laughing our asses off and I'm realizing how stupid these people still sound. So. My point being said is I'm listening to this guy, right? And I say to the guy, you know, he starts telling me, oh, yeah, he's a draft dodger. I said, well, let me put something in perspective for you. I said, let me ask you a question. Let's be serious. I said, because I love the facts. In this day and age, we got to talk about it, especially in politics. We seem to be deviating away from facts. Okay, so let me break it down for you, I said to my friend. I said, this man, if he was in the Army, would have never saw frontline invasion. He would have never even saw a battlefield because he was the heavyweight champion of the world. He would have been fighting exhibitions to boost up the morale of the Army, off the U.S. Army. He would have been a poster child because they would have tried to use him just like they used Joe Louis. Now, that being said, this guy told you, he said, no Viet Cong ever called me nigger. That's exactly what he said. And you know what? The bottom line is, he said, I will never fight your war. He stood up, he lost 3 years of the prime of his life, okay, the best years of his life, and he would have been able to defend his title and be a world champion, and he would have never lost his prime. He gave that up and went piss poor broke, okay, in order to stand by a statement which he meant, and people don't understand it. The guy looked at me, his freaking jaw dropped to the ground pretty much when I said that to him. He looked like he was befuddled, did not know what like to say. He looked like a jackass because that's what Muhammad Ali really gave up. And the problem that I have with these people still, it frustrates me the living shit out of me when people say this and they called him this for years. The guy stood for what he believed in. And you know what? Regardless of anything, he created a movement off of it. The guy had balls of steel. That's why they cracked me up. And take nothing away from Joe Frazier. I love Joe. Joe was a great guy. But you always run into those guys, you know, they're part of that whole blue collar, the whole, listen, oh, we were Frazier guys. Frazier never did. You know what? No. The guy did not believe in what way the war was going. He did not. There's a lot. We get into the whole political end of all this crap. But the bottom line is the guy had balls of steel. And that's where that whole conversation goes. I get frustrated every time I hear it. You know what I mean? And it just,
yeah, but
I just find that story every time.
You have to look at the situation with Joe Louis. You know,
yeah.
When Joe Louis went to the service, what did the service do for Joe Louis when he came
nothing.
Out?
Gave absolutely
him a huge
nothing.
Tax bill. Gave him a huge tax bill. And they made
him
pay it.
They killed him.
You know? Yeah, they gave him a huge tax bill.
And defended his title for, was it for a dollar? Each time he defended his dollar to raise war bonds and all that. And they killed him. They made him a wrestler so he could pay back the taxes.
Yeah, they did.
They took away his money, his trust fund for his children to go to college.
Yep.
I mean, come on, ridiculous.
The biggest crux in the world is the United States government. Let's be real.
The guy. Number one, you talk about things that should be forgiven. The guy gave up his time for free and boosted the morale. He was their poster child and their salesman for those bonds. Like exactly what you just said.
He sure was.
They never charged him them. You should have been forgiven for your debt. The guy was
right.
He was iconic. Yeah, they don't get it. This is how it is, though. A lot of this shit's unraveling right now, though. In this generation, you'll see this stuff is really starting to unravel in this generation now. The people are tired.
Mm-hmm.
They're on their last war horse right now anyway. They're running their last horse right now as they speak. And, you know, like I said, it is what it is. So, you know, and, well, it's a shame to this day.
You look at Ali and the profound effect he had. There's no Don King if there's no Muhammad Ali. I mean, it was Ali that put Don King. I remember Don coming up into the Garden. Don came on the scene. He was managing Ernie Shavers, a guy named Ray Anderson, and Candy Slim. I love him like a son. Jeff Merritt had a little drinking problem. Jorge Ahumada beat Ray Anderson. Ernie Shavers got knocked out by Jerry Corey. And Don King became in infiltration. We was up in the Garden at a college basketball game. and DK walked in, and I said, "Dad, Don, I didn't know you like college basketball." He said to me, "Now I have a piece of paper here that will guarantee Muhammad Ali and George Foreman $5 million apiece to fight in Africa." When he walked out the door, he became the great Don King. Ali was supposed to fight Jerry Norton. And, you know, the profound effect of Ali had, and people understood what he meant to boxing. I asked Mike Tapper if he was around today, how much he'd be worth when closed circuit. Tapper said, you couldn't envision it.
Oh, my God.
And the Garden understood Ali pulling out of the fight to fight for the title, pulling out the fight to make $2 million. And Condon, the relationship he had with Ali, he knew Ali would come back. But there was no bitterness, no sort of anger. Hey, this was Muhammad Ali, and whatever he was going to do was going to be beneficial to boxing. And I remember John Condon told me, "Mel, I don't know how he's going to do it. He's going to win the fight." Leroy Neiman told me a story, gentlemen, that after the last Norton fight, he came into Ali's dressing room, and Ali was soaking his right hand in the bucket, and Eddie and Mark both got, and Hal too, know that Ali had so many hand problems. It was really remarkable.
Yeah.
And he was soaking his hand in the bucket, and Foreman came in, and you know, somebody's sitting down, and Foreman stood over him, and Leroy Neiman said, Ali looked up at George Foreman and told him, "Don't ever fight me, because I'll knock you out." The rest, they say, is it.
It's
sports at Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. Eddie Mustafa is here. Angel Man Freddie, he joined us. I guess he had to run. Mark Breland, Eddie Cotton, G.W. Mike from up New Haven, the Standard Laws journalist and connoisseur extraordinaire, talking about Muhammad Ali. And you know, gentlemen, you know, Eddie, can you look back and see how quick it was? I mean, you know, we're talking about 1 year now that he's passed on. It just seemed like just yesterday, didn't it, Eddie?
It seemed like it was just yesterday because I think about him every day. You know, I catch myself sometimes saying, you know, I gotta call Ali. You know, I gotta call Ali. And then when you wake up, you know, you can't call Ali, and that's a sad part.
Eddie, let me ask you a question. Coming up, you know, I was talking about this the other day, and you know, we talk about world champions, and I'm stuck right now. I'm on like a plane where I'm watching all you guys from the 80s. I've been sitting in my, you know, watching every night. I'm going to sleep watching YouTube while watching all you 80s fighters right now, and I say to myself, you guys had one of the greatest generations of boxing. Mark, you guys too. But coming up from watching Ali in the 70s, that was your inspiration coming up. Now, when you say he gave you, you know, you guys wanted to reflect back on him, what made him such a wonderful champion. You guys tried to emulate that in the way you guys were carried yourself as fighters. You know, I always say fighters touch people in places that nobody else can because, you know, you look how many movies or Academy Award-based winning films, they're all boxing films. A fighter leaves himself in the ring. He's carrying so much more in the ring because he's inspiring so many people with his training and his work ethic. Ali demonstrated that not only in the United States, and I laugh when guys say that, oh, this guy's such a great fighter. This guy did it on a world set level, man. The guy fought
exactly.
You know, and it's just, do you see ever see anybody, I don't see anybody replicating him ever. You know, he was such I just, you know, like you said, he's the greatest. That's all we say. But coming up,
Ali,
what was that
Ali
like watching him?
God.
Yeah. Man, my God, dude. How was it watching him growing up? Like, you guys, this guy was in the flesh. You guys were watching him fight, you know what I mean? Watching him on, like, what was it like watching him coming up when he beat George Foreman?
So I was, you know what? I was, like, very leery about that fight. But then as I talked to him, you know, I said, look here, man. You know, when we go into that ring, you know, we can't go in there with the slightest bit of doubt. So Ali said, man, I'm going to knock him out. And then I believed him. I said, okay, well, let's go to work. And what did he do? He knocked him out.
And the thing about, you know, with that fight with you know, with Foreman, you know, he believed in himself to the point where when he was on the ropes, it was nothing, you know, it seemed like he never got hurt.
Yeah. These films, you'll never be able to replicate. You know, these are guys that were willing to, you know, I don't know. You guys were cut from a different cloth, man. I say it all the time. You know, these younger guys, I said, I cover fights now. I can't even get into writing anything anymore because I can't write something that's not a fact. I can't write something that there's nothing to write about. What are you going to write about nowadays? What great level can you write about at this point in the game? You know, it's sad, you know, and it's amazing because, you know, it's not even like in and out of the ring. We were talking about, I was watching Sultan Ali. Do you guys ever see the time when he rescued that guy that was going to jump off the building? You guys ever see that
jump
one?
Off the building, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember that, yeah.
You're not
going to see that number. No. Ali was one of a kind.
A couple minutes to talk about Ali.
Ali was
doing the show. Just call it Ali.
Yeah. It was, that's something else, man.
You ain't nothing to say. Hey, guys. Okay, I got Mark Breland, Eddie Mustafa's here. Hey,
where do we put him if he never lost that 3 years? Can you imagine if he never lost that 3 years?
No.
I mean, my God. He never lost that 3 years. And just think about how amazing, more amazing he would have been. I mean, I don't think anybody ever beats him in the history. I mean, even those 3 years. I mean, he was lightning fast. It was amazing. Amazing fighter.
Doc Stanley, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust Guard Radio Network. Derrick James is going to join us in a minute. Yes, the trainer of the new welterweight champion, Errol Spence Jr. We're talking about the greatest of all time, and we're not talking about just a great fighter. I think that's the thing here, Eddie, the thing here, Mark, Dusty, G-Dub, Harold. We're talking about Harold, a great human being.
He great.
Yeah. I mean, he took boxing to another level. That was the whole thing about it. He did something that any other fighter could ever, any athlete could ever do at that time. And he just took it to another level to let you know that he just wasn't an athlete, but he was a human being that had certain rights that he thought needed to be talked about. And especially, you know, at that time, things had to change. And he made that change come about, and he was willing to do anything to make it happen. It, even like he said, even if he had to die for it, that was going to be the worst. That's all you had to be done with. And I mean, you have to respect him for that because that's the way you got to live. And I guess, you know, Eddie and Mark and myself, we understand when we went to the boxing world, you know, we knew that if we're going to be the best at it, we had to put our lives on the line. And we realized that looking at Muhammad Ali and knew what he did, so we just took it to that task in life.
Hey, Uncle Howard. Harold.
Yeah.
I got to say, it's Mike. I'm gonna throw some personal stuff out there, and Doc's going to get a little upset. But, Doc, I got to use this as family time for Uncle Harold for a minute. I broke open the homemade Italian wine, and Doc had some. I got some for you. Doc, listen. You know, this is. I'm not using this as a chance to market my product because you know I don't make money off this. But I got the homemade wine in, so we gotta have a glass. Doc, tell him how good it was.
Well, you know I go down in a little Italy every once in a while. So.
I got the goods here though. It's some good stuff. I'm gonna put a bottle aside for you.
Okay, man. Hey, Doc. Did you know that Eddie Mustafa and myself, we started off in the amateurs together?
100 years ago.
Yeah.
That was 100 years ago. We were both 147 pounds. I would never see that in a lifetime.
I'm telling you, boy.
Yeah, I just sit back and relax and just think about the good old days.
Yeah, we had some fun, boy. I ain't gonna lie to you.
We had a lot of fun. That's what fighting was like.
That's funny that you know, you said that about a month ago, a gentleman by the name of Edgar L. Barlett, known as Fuzzy, greatest shorts I've ever seen play. I've said this, I've seen the greatest play. They may have been as good as Fuzzy. Nobody was better than Fuzzy. And I got Derrick James trying to make sure we get him on, having some problems. And he said something, too, that you both said. He said, you know, kids today
don't have fun anymore. And you know, you're both just you know, just related to that. And real fun, not doing stupid stuff, not doing harmful stuff, just really doing stuff that was fun. You know, it was fun for everybody. There was no aftermath. There was no negative repercussions to it. And, yeah, you look back at the game today, a guy that we liked so much, and getting this panel together, I want to get Derek James, and he's got him on the line, you know, Errol Spence Jr. So just hang in there, Derek. And we're talking about Muhammad Ali. Just something. And you look at that whole core of fighters. You talked about what he did for boxing. Condon talked about how him and Ali went out in a newspaper strike and, you know, sold the garden out. He understood. You talked about, Eddie, the kind of guy he was, just bring a toothbrush. I remember he won the Botamkin the Year Award, and I grabbed about, I had about 10 pieces of stuff. I threw in the bag. And so I got there. I got to meet his man, Mahdi. I don't know if you remember Mahdi. We became close.
Yeah, I remember.
And I said,
"Champ,
I got a couple of things for you. Would you sign them for me?" And he signed about three or four things. And I threw everything else in the bag. And Ali looked at me and looked at the bag and said, "Hey, man, what's in the bag, man?" I said, "Champ, you know, I didn't know about it." "Yeah, you can't sign it." He said, "Hey, give it to me." Signed everything. And you know how he would tease you. He took a picture with my lady at that time. And I later asked him to autograph the picture. And when he looked at the picture, he said, "Man, she's a fox." He said, "Man, what you doing with a fox?"
But that was him, though. That was him. You know.
I mean, hey,
Eddie, you know, remember that time Ali had me drive all the way up to that darn training camp up there when you guys were training?
Yep.
What the hell did I drive up there for?
I have the vaguest of ideas. But that's how Ali was, man. He was a lot of fun, though, man.
He was. I mean, Doc, he called me up, and Eddie was there, and they were training. He said, "Well, man," he said, "I don't want to talk on the phone. You need to come up here and talk with me about it." And I said, "Well, Champ, I mean, well, yeah, you're all upstate. And that was a 3.5-hour ride, Doc.
That's right.
That was just there.
Yeah.
And then you
got to
go back.
Yeah, now I got
to
go back."
Gentlemen, we have Derek James here, a skilled man of the sweet science himself, but he's got a guy. You know, Harold, I talked the other day with you, and Dusty likes him. He reminds me a lot of Camacho. But what I liked about Spence when I first met him, he had an air of confidence, had an air of humbleness, and he had a sense of history of the people who went before him. And Derek, you have to have a lot to do with that. Congratulations on your new champion, and your thoughts and reflections, Derek, on Muhammad Ali. Derek's still with us? Oh, hold on, Derek. My bad. Hold on. Go ahead. Okay, there you go, Derek.
Oh?
Yeah, okay, Derek. Yes, Derek, your thoughts on Muhammad Ali, and congratulations on the new champion.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much, guys. My thoughts are, I mean, I loved him as a man, but I think for me, the thing I loved about him was his social activism, you know, because you can, and the way that he accepted his responsibility as to be a celebrity, to be a black man who's a role model, to be, you know, to be defiant, to dare to be great. And that's mostly about him that I love the most, is that he was a man. He never was a boy. He showed us how to be a black man, especially at my age of 45, to see him and everything he did, how he changed professional sports. Now, he took it and put it into his hands. And like everybody, all these professional athletes who are making the money that he's making, you imagine making, what, $16 million fighting George Foreman in Africa in 1970, whatever that is.
1974. October 30th.
1974. So, I mean, so you think about it, and you say that he changed professional sports. He realized who he was as a man to say that what he should be getting paid. He realized as a man is how he should be treated. And I think the best for me, his social activism, is far more great than anything he did in the ring to me.
Wow! So, no, I was in the press room, and Ernie Shavers walked in. We're talking Muhammad Ali. And he dovetailed what you said. He said, before Ali come, guys were fighting like for $20,000 for the heavyweight champion of the world. He changed the scope of marketability and finance for every single athlete in every sport. Tremendous point there, Derek. Tremendous point. We're talking about a guy who just touched all most famous face on the planet. I don't know any other guy you can mention in the same breath with Ali as far as notoriety at that time, and even now, is Pelé. I mean, it's just remarkable. But more importantly, everybody here is not talking about this skilled heavyweight champion. You're talking about this humble, unique individual. You know, Eddie talked about, you know, and Harold and myself, how what a funny guy he was, what a humble guy. And he always, one of the classic lines was, I never looked down on the people that looked up to me. And he just always had time for his people. If you're African American, you know that Harold, and you know that too, Eddie. I remember if you came, hey man, don't worry about it. Come on, I'll give you an interview. Simply, unquestionably, the greatest of all time. Dr. Stanley, Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and God Network. We are talking about Muhammad Ali. Remember Ali? But Derek, the guys got you here. I know they want to come at you. Dusty, what's happening with Spence? Dusty, you can start it. Congratulations on the fight there. You had that long 9-month layover. What's happening? He said he wanted Keith Thurman. How soon you expect to get back in the ring? What's happening with you and your new champion, Derek?
Well, you know, I think that he's kind of settling into being the champion. And I know just as he wanted to win the title, he's just as eager to get back in there and get back in the gym. So, because he understands the role, his role as a fighter and as an individual. So, it's one thing to win it. It's another thing to be able to keep it and sustain it. And this is, like I said, this is one more step to his ultimate goal. That has to be the undisputed world toweight champion of the world, which, you know, he wants to keep coming. I have no feelings about it because I don't like to interject my feelings into his career, right? So my goal is, for me, is to only help him be the best fighter he can be at, you know, to be prepared. So that's what we really want to do with this Keith Thurman. He's injured right now, so we'll see how that works out. I want to fight who he wants to fight.
Well, would he take a fight to keep busy?
Yes, hopefully, yes. Yeah,
would he take a fight to keep busy? I think I saw, correct me if I'm wrong, Derek, he mentioned something like in September. So if Thurman is not ready, would he take a fight to keep busy?
Yes, he will. There might be a
Danny Garcia maybe, or one of them guys that are still on that contender level to keep himself busy. Thurman?
Yeah. He's definitely going to stay busy. So whoever it is, you know, he wants to defend his heat. I think that he felt like he was a little rusty in the last fight, which he told me that. So I think that he's looking to fight, you know, and to stay busy and just stay, you know, defend that title, because the ultimate goal is, like I said, to be the undisputed world champ of the world.
Right.
May I ask you this question?
Yeah, no problem.
I didn't get a chance to. First of all, congratulations on your victory. That was great.
Thank
going
you.
Back there, taking
Thank
the title.
Thank you.
Impressed with your boy. I do have to ask you two questions. Number one, I wanted to ask you, how did you rate his performance overall in that? And you guys are very humble guys, so I just want you to be unhumble for 1 minute, all right? So I want you to, what do you say his performance, what would you rate it as?
I would say like a B minus or something like that, you know. Because I know he's better than that, right? And that I think that, like, he said it, but we had a conversation on Sunday after the fight, everything was done, and he said he just felt like he was a step behind, a little rusty. So, you know, saying that is to say that, you know, he wasn't himself, and I agree, because it should have been an easier fight, in the sense that, I mean, because once you play it back and you watch it, and I see what he was doing wrong, and you know what we were doing wrong, because I don't care about Kelvin, what he's doing wrong. So what now, we were doing wrong.
Gotcha. Now, when I, not that he was in any major jeopardy, because again, you know, you listen to these casters, they're basically like listening to Fox News sometimes. My biggest thing concern was that every part of a fight. There's a lot of guys that don't understand boxing, but the guys that do understand boxing, there's those little clips of adversity that you see. You know, when a fighter actually starts stepping in and being comfortable, he had a little adversity. I think it was in that fifth round, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he was getting. Kel was starting to, you know, just like a little bit of the pressure because he's been there before. But I noticed he overcame that little hurdle that he had. It was mid-range. I don't know what round it was, but there was a little mid-range fight. My question to you is, how adverse was that? Like, how deep waters was he in? And what did you guys do to make that adjustment? Or did he just do that on his own? Did it come as second nature? Or did you guys talk about it in the corner?
Well, you know, what happened was that, you know, we realized that he's not as a big a puncher as everybody said he is. If you look at the fight, it showed a lot about, I'm saying about Kell Brook, is that he's not a big, like this big superpower puncher. Because I've watched it, like, you know, you watch the video, but then the day of the fight, I watched, and he throws his right hand, and he's already kind of like, he's not putting his full body into the punch. So it's not really as hard as, but he pushes you.
Absolutely.
And that's really what it is more than anything. So if you notice, even in that round, what you're talking about, Kell landed some shots, but not really, because he was pushing him more than he was hitting it. And so what we did is that I just said, listen, man, put your hands up and just walk him down behind the jab. And I told him to do a little something. And if you notice, he's a guy, he's like, I want to break him down. So he wants to break him down.
And the body punches
constantly. But what happens is his eyes are so great, his reaction time is so great. So all I do is say, okay, do this and do that, and he'll just fit it into that slot, right, to where I ask him to do it. And I just told him to keep jabbing, because if you notice in the last, when he knocked him down, he hit him like three or four different jabs, like bam, I just jab, because that was the key to everything. Is the jab, even when they said Kell Brook had a great jab, right? If you think about the fight, Kell Brook, coming into the fight, we knew he does great 1-2. He has a good single, just shoot a right hand. He throws a good right uppercut, and he throws a good left hook. But if you notice throughout the whole fight, after like the third or fourth round, he didn't throw any of those other punches. The only thing he would land, he would push a right hand in there. So, and that would be like, and it wasn't like a hard right hand. You just push your right hand in there. So, and in the corner, you get your eyes like this. And he already doing is pushing the right hand in there. I said, so block the shot and come over the top of it. Well, you don't have to be there, because what Errol would do is basically win the whole round. Then Kell would throw a little flurry at the end or something. I said, listen, if you don't want to engage, just start boxing. Move around a little bit. And so you see I wandered around, he was moving around, man. And so it was good, you know. I think we needed that. You know,
I thought you guys did really well. I was really, really impressed with the performance. And, you know, one other question I got for you is, too, you know, now that I'm on, we're talking about the body punching. The thing I really like about Spence is, a lot of these guys nowadays, even the guys that they say have a jab, they throw tentative jabs. They throw measured jabs.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Spence is, I like the fact that he throws a real jab and he puts
a
something behind
punch.
It. Yeah, throws a real jab. You know, it's something, it's not just a measuring stick. It's like, okay, if you jab me, I'm going to counter your jab. I'm going to duck. I'm going to swivel myself like Ezra Charles used to. And the body punching, the thing that I like too, that is, when he comes off with the basic 1-2, because he's so fundamentally sound, he comes down to the body. He's not afraid because his positioning is right. When he goes to the body, he's not afraid to get countered, because all these guys are afraid of a body attack. Now, there was a guy, I want to ask you as a trainer. There was a guy, two guys that I used to talk to, one from England and one was an old Cuban fighter. I don't remember hearing too many guys about this doing in the United States, but these two guys were very sound body punchers. Do you guys ever do just body sparring, like in the gym, where you can't spar every day today, but do you ever do just body sparring at all?
No, we don't, know, not at all. I mean, like, what's funny is that when he was an amateur, I started training as an amateur. So his dad, his dad said that the trainer that he had before me, because I came after his third year, right? And
yep.
he said, why, and his dad said, he asked, why don't y'all teach him how to do body punches? He said, well, the guy said, well, they don't count those points, so we don't teach it.
Right.
But what I did
wow.
was that I grew up in the gym with this one guy who was a great body puncher. And
yep.
I just, you take different elements of different aspects of your life, from fighters that you thought were great, and you implement it into the guy that you're working with. And, I mean, once, and Earl is a very intelligent guy to where he'll see something work, and he will not deter from that. So what y'all saw was like him knowing that it's going to work eventually, just like Bundu. If you remember, he was throwing body punches at Bundu, and Bundu was blocking them and taking them.
Mm,
When that one got in, because he would like let him know, oh, didn't expect everything else. So Earl hit him in the middle with a body shot, and Kel kind of like, oh. And after that, it was like he didn't know. It was like an octopus. And like what we did to prepare, we sparred like 18, 19 rounds. 3 minute round, 30-second break. But what's funny about it, when we got to Bolton, we trained in Amir Khan's gym. And so he had a one minute break in between rounds. So what they did in turn was, instead of doing, they couldn't adjust a 1 minute break, so we did a 3 minute 30-second round, right? Because we kept the 30-second break and just added 30 seconds to the round, and we still did 14 rounds. So that's the level of conditioning he had from coming from doing whatever we did in America to going over there and doing whatever. And so we could do the round, and he throws as many punches in the last round as he did in all the other rounds.
Hold on a minute, Derek. Doc Stanley, SportsNet Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. We'll remember Muhammad Ali, and you talk Ali, you talk about a great human being, and you talk about boxing. Right now, we're going to close out and do SportsNet with Mike on lights off, and that will be handled by Dusty and GW. Mike, don't anybody move just a minute. Larry Hardesty closes out. Three thoughts. Live your life today. No, that's Larry. Mike's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Service to others is rent you pay for your room here on earth. Muhammad Ali. I am my brother's keeper, Roberto Clemente, and my brothers come in all colors. Nelson Mandela. Don't anybody move. Mr. Hardesty, come on in here now.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding. But I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
And if I may say that the Sports in Depth Nation is here.
Huh?
The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the show that serves the great is indeed here, and that's the Unstoppable Doc Stanley.
They're all here. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, Golden Boy, Mark Breland, Angel Man Freddy had joined us recently. He had to run. Derek James, who has us the truth. Destino Baby, Lois, GW Mike, and Double Bell Howard Weston Jr. Gentlemen, I'm going to go into studio. Dusty and Harold and G-Dub, you got our guests.
You on the show?
Keep shooting the questions at them. And we've got another good 40 minutes of Sports in Depth. This is now the section of Sports in Depth. Sports in Depth, mic on, lights off. Muhammad Ali, three of his most famous quotes. Service to others, pay for your room here on earth. The other quote, I never look down on the people that looked up to me. And the quote that seems, which he once said he really didn't mean, but it turned out to be the truth, I am the greatest. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. And now, the Destino Baby, Lewis, GW, Mike, and Double Bell Harold. They have our guests, Derek James, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, and Mark Breland. Gentlemen, they're all yours. And for the next 45 minutes, Sports in Depth, mic on, lights off, Destino Baby Lois and his mule. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us. And now you're in the hands of Dusty, GW Mike, and Double Barrel Harold. Dusty, lead it off, baby. Keep it going.
Yeah. Doc, you still there?
Yeah. Go ahead. You guys handle it now. You and Mike with the questions. You got Derek. You got Ian Mustafa. And Mark Breland, Chief Shooter, and Adam. You got it
right.
For the next. We got a good 45 minutes. Mic on, lights off. I'm in studio. You got it now. Take over. Eddie, love you, baby. Always good to hear from you. Get back to you too, Mark.
Be cool, man.
You got the champ there. Ain't nobody calling for him. Take care of that. And Eddie, find them trunks, baby. Eddie, you know, you're right. Harold, man, you guys will always be fans. You brought me some of the greatest moments of my life in boxing and in life. And both of you guys, I will love you all forever. And like
thank
I said, you guys
you.
Are the greatest of all time. Doc Sandy, Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio. Dusty, take over, baby.
Well, Derek, the question here that in my day, there were no southpaws and right-handed and southpaws. Today, the most prolific fighters today are southpaws and Spencers. But I spoke to a coach. I'm not going to mention his name but he said that he was developing a program where he's trying to make his fighters ambidextrous. And in the long run, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Spence is a tremendous southpaw, but have you thought about the fact that you could develop him at one time or another to fight right-handed?
Well, you know, what's funny is that in between the fight before they announced the Kell Brook fight,
yeah.
We played around with it for the first time ever. I don't necessarily believe in going away from what you're great at.
Yes.
But this is something he just wanted to explore. So
mm-hmm.
We explored. I watched him on the mitts right-handed. This was right after the Bundu fight.
Right.
He had this idea that he wanted to play around with it, and we played around with it. And and what's funny about it is one of the times when Kell Brook threw a shot and he kind of tried to get away, and L stepped to him, and it was like, oh, he threw a right hook. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it was like almost in a right-hand stance when he stopped him and caught him when Kell tried to pull out. But, yeah, we work with it. We fight in the left-handed stance, but he was just, he sparred like many rounds like that. So
right.
And a lot of the guys said that he's adjusted because he said he can see it easier from that stance, you know.
Right.
So on. It's nothing that it was just something just to mess around with, just to keep him busy and occupied and fit, and not bored, so he wouldn't get bored.
Mm. The reason that this question is generated is because I've seen Terrence Crawford do it all the time, and he seems to be just as comfortable from one side of the plate as the other side of the plate, like a baseball player who could take you deep from both sides. And I'm wondering if now that it's a coming trend where guys are not saying, hey, let me try both sides of the plate, because it does develop both arms.
Now what you're doing, Dusty, you're going back, and I see where you're going because I'm sticking with you guys. We're talking about Terrence Crawford. And he has the ability to go. How could Camacho do that? I know Hagler tried that in the early parts of the fight with Ray Leonard. I don't think he was that adapted. But could Camacho go one way, Harold?
I mean, he didn't like doing it, but Camacho always had the feeling that. That's what you say that. I feel that anybody what you're good at, you should just stay at what you are. I mean,
right.
Why change up if you're successful doing what you're doing? I mean, that's like telling Muhammad Ali go southpaw because he's good at left-handed. That means that's, you know, why do it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only reason I raise it up is...
Give me a second. Mark, we got you here. Now, what's happening with your guy, Wilder? You know, we got the Joshua just wanted to beat Klitschko. Fury's on the scene. Is he back in the ring soon? Are either one of these guys ready to fight him? What's happening with your man, Mark? And everybody knows that if you leave that corner, he's done that thing with Derek, with Smith. What's happening with the champ? He's really seen as a legitimate
Mark,
champ. What's happening with him, Mark?
They haven't done anything yet. We don't have anything scheduled right now. But I would like to get Joseph Parker, but I don't know what happened with that fight. So now I just have to wait and see what's going on.
Okay, so that right now we got that in the wings. Yo, Eddie,
yeah.
You're listening. You're listening. You know, at the big rate, what do you think of Wilder and what do you think of Joshua and Klitschko? I think Klitschko is not the same fighter since he lost Manny Stewart, but I thought that last fight, gentlemen, we go across the board, I think that was the most aggressive I've seen Klitschko fight in a long time, Eddie. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know what? First and foremost, I want to congratulate Derek. Look, when I first saw Errol Spence box with Floyd, I told everybody that would listen, he's going to be world champion.
Hmm.
And when he went over there, and I don't know if you saw a lot of the interviews that they do on the computer.
I saw you say that.
Let them know. That's right. I told everybody. I'm not even worried about him. He's going to come back champion, guaranteed.
That's
you know what
I'm saying?
Like,
yeah, he's a good fighter.
Well, you know what I like about him, too? He reminds me of you guys. He's old school. He said, hey, man, the champ has to go where the fight is. You know, I ain't got no problem fighting with. Well, Eddie, nobody showed that more than you when you beat Marvin Johnson, man. You went down to Marvin Johnson's territory, fought in his hometown. I think he had his family as the judges. I know too, was a referee for sure. You know, and it didn't matter.
All I wanted was a ring and a referee that can count to 10. I'll do the rest. I don't worry
Eddie,
about that.
Eddie, and you did.
Yeah.
But that's how it is. But I knew Errol was going to be champion. There was no doubt in my mind. You know, so, I mean, hey, congratulations, Derek. You know.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, it's funny that I felt the exact same way. I mean, you know, you try to play it out in your head. How it's going to go down. You know you guys want to get him. You just don't know how. But
right,
I mean, I told
right.
people, like, off the record, I said that if Errol doesn't knock him out early, which I didn't, I mean, I don't know how, you know, it depends on how Kell reacts. I said that if they go 12 rounds, I said either Kell Brook will never be able to box again or he could possibly, it could be fatal. Because the reason why I said it, because he punches so hard and he's so accurate, right? And Kell Brook, I saw an interview with him after the fight, and he said that the reason why he quit is because he said Errol was landing, the shots basically at will, and he was not missing, and he said he was punching so hard that he said he thought it would have been fatal. That's why he said he quit. So that means when you say fatal, that means you thought he was going to kill him. I thought he was going to kill him.
That's the name of that game.
And so, I mean, you know, and you know, I did see a video that Eddie and everybody in the gym was talking, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the love because I know that you've been a supporter from the beginning, basically, because we spoke with Floyd, he had 4 fights. So, I was very happy about that.
The thing that impressed me with Derek when I first saw him over at the Barclays Center, first of all, he was a humble Christ-centered young man. He's humble, but when he had something to say, he had something to say. But the thing that got me was he had a sense of history of the guys who came before him. You know, he reminds me of Camacho Harrell in the sense he's a guy that's like a teenager, but he's got the head of a guy 40, 50 years old. And that's a hard combination to beat. Boxing skills, the mentality of a guy 3 times your age, and a southpaw. That makes you, you know, Derek, that makes you damn near unbeatable, man.
Yeah. We just got to stay, listen, we got to stay on top of it, man. Just stay on top of it. The key to it all is constantly keep working and fixing everything. I feel like we did wrong in the fight. You know, I tell them I'm not an Errol Spence fan. My job is to make sure, you know, I correct what he does wrong. Part of the video that was showing, he said when he first started training with me, he said, man, what am I doing right? I said, listen, everybody in the world is going to tell you what you're doing right. My job is to make sure we fix what you do wrong. Because, I mean, you know, you got a million people around to tell you everything you're doing right. And if you believe that and you buy that and I buy that, and that's the difference. I said it's more difficult when you train a fighter who's a good fighter because everybody always sees the end results. But it's so much about everything that happens in between that, because if he starts to drop his left hand or his right hand a little bit lower, lower and lower, and by the time it's a fight time, I never said anything, man's down to his hip, and he can't make that adjustment to get it up.
Get that happen. Get that happen.
That's right. That's
hey,
right.
Derek, so real quick, just that, you get back to Eddie, you, and you too, Derek, you, start with you, Eddie. Did you come behind him, Mark? Did you, what was the transition like for you guys as fighters? And I think Dusty would be a great trainer, same as you, though. What was the transition like for you guys as elite fighters and to become trainers? Because there must have been times you said, you know, you want the guy to do what you do, but he didn't have to do Eddie and then Mark and then Derek. What was the transition like from out of the ring to being a trainer? Buddy McGregor said he always wanted to be a trainer. But what was the transition like for you guys?
My transition was to never have a fighter fight the way I used to fight. You know, whatever he brings to the table, I just take him to another level. That's all it is. You know, I know a lot of great fighters that try to have their fighters emulate them, but they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right.
You know, they can't do it. You know, I never tell a fighter, fight like I used to do this here. I used to do this. No. Let me show you how I want you to do it. And then when he feels
that's
comfortable
right.
doing that, then we take it to another level. As simple as that.
So for me, Derek, you know, I always, as Eddie said, I want him to be the best that he can be possibly. So I cater to what he does best. I work on what he does best. I mean, at times, I feel like in a perfect world, the guy would have a jab. You know, and I think about all these ideas of what would make this guy greater. What could I do to help him get better? And my transition was different because I was a fighter, and I started promoting my last fights. My last couple of fights, I started to promote them. Then after that, I kind of worked with some fighters, and so meeting Errol was a little different. But my transition was great. You realize that. You're not the guy anymore, and you got to accept that role. So you accept every role of it, every aspect of it. So you don't try to overplay those guys. And you play the background. And you're the guy that nobody cares about, and that's good because whenever they mention his name, you know, your name is on their lips also. So it doesn't matter. You want to make sure he's the best he can be and go out and do his best. It's not so much about me as it is about him. You know, I'm not going to be yelling and trying to do a show and put on a show in the corner for the television cameras, you know. And I just kind of, he knows what to do. We work on so many different things that I reference something that we worked on before. And he knows how to go to that, and that's where we go from.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, again, you know, the whatever he brings to the table, the fighter, you just take him to another level.
Yeah,
you know, that's all you do, you know.
Right, trying to make better at what you see when he got. If he's got a semi good jab, you want to turn that jab into a better jab, make him work it. Mhm.
You know what's so great about this sport, Doc, in general, that you can't learn everything in this sport.
Yeah.
It's impossible. To learn everything, and that's the great part. You got to take whatever skills you got as an athlete in boxing and learn the best you can out of what your trainer's teaching you and be the best at it. That's all you can do. But you can't learn everything in this sport because Joe Frazier wasn't in the boxing, Muhammad Ali wasn't a body puncher. So, you know, you just can't learn everything in this sport and be that kind of fighter. It's very hard, very hard.
Yeah.
You know, when you think you know it all, that's the time. That's when it's time for you to step off.
That's
right.
The same problem.
That's the problem.
Hey, Eddie, that's the exact same thing I say. When you learn everything, you've already mastered boxing. You should retire.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's exactly what I mean. You took my. Yeah. I mean, that's what I say. And when you learn everything, man, you should retire.
That's it. You can't do nothing else.
It's very hard to even perform those kind of tasks of in boxing. You know, being a boxer, being a slugger, being a counterpuncher, being, you know, just so many things to it that, you know, you can't make your body go through, because your body got to go through a transition that is impossible for you to move in different directions, stand in different directions, throw a punch in a different way. I mean, it's just so many ways you got to take your body through to get immune to those kind of positions to mm-hmm. execute the boxing, to you being a great boxer at the same time. It's hard to to learn everything in boxing. You'll never get that.
I'm learning every day. You know, I learn every day. Every day I go to the gym. You know, I try to learn something new.
That's right.
You know, I see other guys. Even I see amateurs doing this here. I said, okay, maybe this will work. And I implement it in. You know, so, I mean, it is what it is.
Because, coming up, I said, trying to emulate guys doing different things. I see a move a guy makes. I'm like, wow, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try it. You know, it might work better for me than it did for him.
You know.
But the only way you will know is if you try it.
You know, one of the things for me is that what's funny about it is that, you know, people come, the more visibility you attain, the more people think you know more, right? And they come up to you and they ask you questions. I said, man, I don't know what to tell you. I said, I'm not that great that I can tell you what you should be doing. Excuse me, because I don't know what you can and can't do, first and foremost. So I'm not the guy to say I know everything, because I don't know, and I can't tell you anything that to do, because I didn't work with you. I didn't train you. I didn't help you. So I don't know what to tell you. I mean, so I'm not that. I know my limitation. You know, some people may feel like they can go in and change the world. No, I know I can't, because I don't know what its foundation is. I don't know what he can and can't do. So I just say, man, I'm not great enough to do that. Like, come on, no, I can't do it. I mean, I can't tell you what you should be doing, because I don't know what you can do.
Hey, that's just how it is. But I love teaching. That's the key. I love teaching.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's right.
I love
that's
a
right,
good student.
Oh, man, you love it. Listen, we all love a good student.
The first time a guy come to me and tell me I know it all, I said, well, you don't need me.
You don't need me. Or this is how somebody else told me how to do it. Well, listen, you go back to that person, and they will continue to tell you how you do it. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot. I had a guy that was a world champion, and he came to the gym. His people wanted me to train him. I said, no problem. When this guy started telling me what to do, I said, let me tell you something. I'm going to drive you to the airport. You know, you jump on the plane going back to St. Louis, bro. We can't do nothing.
That's right.
Well, gentlemen, look here, I got to go, because I'm over here looking at the game, and Cleveland's getting swamped.
Yes.
All right, look here, man. It's nice talking to you guys. Derek, you be cool, baby.
Right.
Tell Eric I said, what's up?
I will. I was with
Mark be cool.
as the Golden Gloves this year.
You got it. Huh?
Yeah. I said I was with Mark at the Golden Gloves this year, at the New York Golden Gloves, because it was the week that my guy Jermell Charlo fought also on the fight card. And, But all right, guys. Are you leaving?
I don't know what they're going to do. Well, I guess they're going to.
But Doc around? Is Doc still around?
No, I guess don't sound like that.
Yeah. All right. All right, Mark, get in touch, man. Stay in touch, my brother.
Definitely.
All right.
I'll be talking with you.
All right, my brother. Take care, fellas.
All right, y'all. Jeez.
It's
23 o'clock. Temperature 26.8 degrees C. It's 0 o'clock, temperature 26.5 degrees C.